Good morning. Welcome to Catholic Community Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. I'm Father Greg Sackowitz, pastor of St. Mary Parish in Evanston, and co-hosting this morning, again, back by popular demand, Wayne Magid.
An incredible lineup.
Whoa. Okay. Vice President and Chief of Staff of Loyola University.
Good morning.
Good morning, Wayne. How are you?
I've been better, but I hope I can get through this hour without falling over. It's been, you know, I've been a little flu, a little bit, everything's going around, so.
You're prone to sinus infections.
I think so.
We're going to get this microphone adjusted here a little bit, Ben. But the thing is, a lot of it's going around
but
this time
of year. But it's Friday, so that's a good thing.
And, also do keep in prayer, 25 years ago today, so January 28th, 1986, the tragedy with Challenger.
That's right, 25 years.
The shuttle.
Yeah.
25 years ago. I think they talk about the 73 seconds from launch to explosion. Realize that was 25 years ago today. And I think it was how many lives were lost on the Challenger? Was it 8? I'm not sure. Maybe someone could call in and let us know that. It'd be 312-255-8408. But do keep in prayer. At amazing how quickly that quarter of a century has gone by. We have a tremendous program lined up. Pastoring multiple parishes is our focus for the first half of Catholic Community Faith here on Relevant Radio 950. We have three guests in studio who are well-versed on the subject. First, Rita Kattner, the Director of the Archdiocesan Office for Councils, Father Patrick Lee, Pastor of Immaculate Conception Parish on North Park Avenue in Chicago, and St. Joseph Parish on Orleans, and Father Freddie Washington, Pastor of St. Mary Magdalene and St. Ambrose Parishes in Chicago. Welcome to our guest this morning to Catholic Community Faith.
Thank you.
And it's great to have you. Rita, we're going to begin. Just tell us, what do we mean by pastoring multiple parishes? Because that is not a term that would have been around in the Archdiocese until rather recent. So what does that mean?
It means that you have one pastor who has more than one parish. So in our diocese, everybody's got, like, those that have multiple parishes, they have two. Although we have two sets of parishes that are combined now, and that's Blessed Trinity up in Waukegan, and it's all the Waukegan parishes with one pastor are connected together. And it's, so it's four worship sites, one pastor. And then down in McKinley Park, we have Blessed Sacrament Parish, which is the three McKinley Park parishes with one pastor and an associate pastor.
And I think you mentioned before the program there are 12 pastors in the Archdiocese of Chicago who are doing two parishes. Is that correct?
Right.
Father Pat, what are some of the challenges or dimensions of a multi-parish pastoring role as opposed to being within one parish community?
Well, I'm working very hard to make it one parish community on two sites. But I think the biggest problem is that people resist change. We all resist change. And in the beginning, there was a lot of fear from the parish that I was stationed at, Immaculate Conception, that they wouldn't get my time anymore, because they had to share me with St. Joseph. St. Joseph assumed I would favor Immaculate Conception because I had been there for quite a while. But we've kind of hashed out those problems. I think the biggest challenge for me is the part of pastoral ministry I like the least is administration, and I just doubled my administration with two sites.
Yeah. So. And what did you do, I mean, along the journey to kind of break down those fears and trepidations on both sides from both parishes about how you're going to spend your time, who you're going to favor? Was the parish council network a key to all of that?
Well, I had two separate parish councils for the first year or year and a half. I don't even remember. I discussed it. We had town hall meetings. I laid out, this is how I see this working. Share your ideas with me. But I think probably the biggest change came when I combined all the councils with representatives on each of them.
Now, was that met with resistance, Pat?
At first, but when they realized they had fewer meetings to go to, suddenly that becomes
they welcomed
appealing.
It. Yeah. And then Father Freddie, the fact that you are a pastor of two parishes, St. Mary Magdalene and St. Ambrose, my first question is, like in the case of Father Pat Lane, he was named pastor of Immaculate Conception in Chicago, and then years later added on St. Joe's on Orleans. In your situation, did you walk into a situation where you pastored immediately two parishes, or was it one and then the other?
It was one, then the other. I was pastor at St. Mary Magdalene for at least 2 years prior to being asked to be pastor of St. Ambrose. And for both of those parishes, the uniqueness of them, they're in two different deaneries, so that's two different meetings for me as well. Just the uniqueness and history of each of those parishes. St. Mary Magdalene Parish was originally a Polish parish, and now African-American, Polish, Haitian, and Mexican. And then St. Ambrose Parish, which was originally an Irish parish, now predominantly African-American, with people from the neighboring religious communities in the University of Chicago, et cetera, coming in to join. But the idea there is, again, that these would remain two distinct parishes.
So have you had the integration that Father Pat talks about across those two parishes, or are you pretty much operating both of these parishes independently?
We're operating each independently with some staff sharing. So, okay. For example, the business manager, the accountant, to try to create some synergies with the resources, limited resources.
Rita, you shared with us before the program began that multi-parish pastoring is now in existence across the U.S. in about 35% to 40% of parishes.
Yes.
That number blew me away. Has that been on the increase? Has it been pretty stable over the past few years?
I think it's starting to stabilize, but there was a study done on that because we were realizing that, especially in dioceses that are smaller or rural, there's more of that. I mean, when we did a conference a few years ago, Father Pat was at that, I had a priest at my parish, at my table, who had six parishes that he was circuit riding on the weekends.
In what
going
state?
To Mass. And I believe he was one of the western states.
See, I know it's very, very common, like in Wisconsin, in Texas, those two states come to mind. Very common
Iowa
for a pastor to have four parishes.
Yeah.
Where on a Sunday morning, you are a circuit rider. And that has got to be so tough, where you finish Mass in one community, get in the car, drive 30 miles, drive again, and you're doing this every Sunday, and there's no let up.
Right.
And there's just no love. And the thing is now for both Pat and for Freddie, now, you know, I pastor St. Mary Parish in Evanston, and a wonderful, wonderful faith community. The only thing I have similar to both of you is with St. Nick's in Evanston, we share the school. So our school at St. Mary's closed down in 1986. So now we're Pope John the 23rd on the grounds of St. Nick's, and the model is working extremely well. But let me ask both of you, where you are a resident in terms of the rectory situation or home, does the other parish become distant to you because it's not on the grounds? Do you know what I'm talking about? Freddie?
I felt that at some point, but then I was able through our community to get an associate. So that one of us live in one parish and the other live in the other, so that both places have a resident priest, but I'm the non-resident pastor.
Got it. How about for you, Pat?
Well, my two churches are only 6 blocks away from each other, so I'm running back and forth all day long. And I maintain offices at both sites for a number of reasons. Parking is more available at Immaculate Conception. We will soon have parking at St. Joseph, but I moved to St. Joseph because our school grew so much that I had to surrender my living space for office space. So I've spent half of my time living at IC and now I've moved to St. Joseph, so it evens out.
Now, one could draw the conclusion that the reason for all of this is the shortage of priests, but that's not the driving reason. We want to talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio, 950 AM. It's 9:11 in the morning, and we'll be right back.
Cardinal George directs the catechetical activities of the Archdiocese of Chicago through the Office for Catechesis and Youth Ministry. Our office promotes lifelong catechesis by directing certification and formative opportunities for those who teach catechesis in the more than 350 parishes that make up the Archdiocese.
Each year we host a myriad of opportunities to enhance adult faith formation and youth ministry programs. We sponsor certification classes, guest speakers, youth rallies, retreats, and our well-attended annual Chicago Catechetical Conference.
We work closely with pastors to ensure that their congregations and staffs are well-formed in teaching and learning about the Catholic faith. Our highly skilled coordinators serve various ethnic groups, speak multiple languages, and are always ready to serve Christ through catechesis.
Log on to www.catechesis-chicago.org or www.youthministry-chicago.org to learn more about how we can better serve you.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
During the next half hour, we'll talk with Cardinal Francis George about the great work being done with money raised in the annual Catholic Appeal. You'll hear from parents who are happy they made the decision to send their children to Catholic schools. And we'll take you to the annual Hispanic Catholic celebrations of the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe and La Posada.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You, compelling television about your Archdiocese.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio, 950 AM. I'm Father Greg Sackles, along with Wayne Majars. Our phone number, 312-255-8408, 312-255-8408. Jumping on the conversation about pastoring multiple parishes. The time is 9:13. Our guests are Rita Katner, Father Patrick Lee, and Father Freddie Washington.
And, you know, as many of you know, Pope John Paul II is on the fast track to sainthood. One of the major steps is beatification. And on May 1st of this year, you can attend the beatification ceremony of Pope John Paul II in St. Peter's Square with Pope Benedict XVI. A wonderful pilgrimage to Rome is being planned. It includes the beatification ceremony itself, sightseeing, private mass with Cardinal George. More information at the Archdiocesan website, www.archchicago.org. Click on Pilgrimage to Rome for all the details. And we were talking this morning with Colleen Dolan from the press office here, and it sounds like it's going to be a fabulous trip. Only 50 seats available, so don't wait too long. That one's definitely going to fill up. We were talking before the break a little bit about why multi-parish pastoring, and I think one of the conclusions that one can draw is because there's a shortage of priests, but there are other reasons or other dimensions why this happens. Father Pat, why in your case?
Well, I'm in an area with a rapidly changing demographic, and young families are moving back into the city. So for the past 16 years, we had been working on reopening Catholic schools in the area. And Bishop Ed Conway, who has since passed on, was our vicar. And he asked me to consider this dual pastoral role because there was a priest who was well over the age of retirement, a Benedictine, who was experiencing poor health and had to retire. But they had a campus that would serve us for the expansion of the school at Immaculate Conception. Mm-hmm. And since both of the parishes were rather small by a lot of standards, he thought it would be manageable and that having gone through a changing demographic and adapted to it at Immaculate Conception, that I'd be able to do the same at St. Joseph with the reconfiguration of Cabrini-Green. So.
Okay. And then, Father Freddie, how did it happen that you ended up being in a situation of pastoring two parishes? Is it a similar story to Father Pat, or what was the situation with St. Mary Magdalene and St. Ambrose?
I think the number one reason was our community, the Congregation of the Holy Ghost. We were trying to create a presence of ministry in the Archdiocese, and we had already been at St. Mary Magdalene, and we were looking for another location that was closer to the school where our students would study at Catholic Theological Union in Hyde Park. And so it was a good synergy between those two parishes, with the hope that eventually we would have two pastors, one in each place.
Now, is that going to happen?
That is going to happen at some point. We are still working on that with my associate, for example. Part of the mentoring process would be for him to be able to work with me and see how the two parishes are, and then to eventually have him to take over at one of
them. Let's talk about the faith community dimension of all this, because I would imagine that as Father Pat and Father Freddie have articulated some real operational and integration concerns when this happens, there are also, I would imagine, there's a dimension of richness that comes when it begins to click and it starts to work, and you've got one faith community and another one sharing ideas, coming together, recognizing that it's not just about them and their parish and their pastor, but that it's a bigger world out there in addition to their neighboring parishes and the Archdiocese of Chicago. Hmm. From a council perspective, Rita, tell us a little bit about your experience on how that starts to gel and come together, and how representatives from one faith community begin to sit down and dialogue with another, and what that really adds to their dimension of richness in the council experience.
Well, a lot of times they'll find out a lot more about what parish is all about. Also, they can extend their ministries, because in some parishes, they just don't have enough people to have lots of different ministries. So when they start to share, you know, for adult ed, they get many more people. For young adults, you know, that want to meet other people, when you start to do it with other parishes, you start to see a larger population to get to know.
Yeah.
And I know in a lot of the rural areas, that's what they have found, that a lot of ministries could begin to happen that they couldn't do before because they didn't have the people. Some of the parishes, the numbers are so small that there's not enough to do some of the things, and if you start to do them together.
And I would imagine, Father Pat, there's a learning dynamic that begins to take place where the expertise or the passion of one faith community begins to rub off on another and grow a seed and start to nurture there.
Yeah, I think so. I experienced, because Immaculate Conception in the beginning was certainly more affluent than St. Joseph, we had been providing a food pantry and Christmas and clothing banks to Cabrini-Green for years. Well, I moved it over to St. Joseph and opened it up to volunteers from both places. So we were able to move the site of this help to where the clientele was. And so that made it easier for them, but it showed the St. Joseph community that some of their presuppositions about Immaculate Conception were wrong, and that they did care for the poor, and and they got to work together, which is always helpful.
You know, Freddie, pastoring two parishes, in the time you've done it, what has surprised you the most? Because, you know, when we walk in as pastors, we're going to get surprised. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have a template to work from, but all of a sudden you deal with a model of two parishes. You have an idea of what maybe you would like to do, but what has truly been the biggest surprise for you?
The biggest surprise had been just watching people be able to articulate for me what they saw as a vision for their parish. People in the early morning mass didn't really know the people at the later morning mass. Now that they're sharing a pastor, people are talking to one another in ways that they hadn't done before. And so that has been a wonderful, wonderful surprise for me.
You are listening to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. We're talking about the multi-parish pastoring going on here in the Archdiocese of Chicago. It's 920, and we'll be right back.
Join the movement to run the 2011 Bank of America Chicago Marathon on Sunday, October 9th as a pledge runner for Team Catholic Charities. As a member of Team Catholic Charities, you'll be running to help our neighbors in need of food, clothing, and shelter, necessities for everyday survival. To join or sponsor the Catholic Charities Marathon team or committee, call 312-655-7912. That's 312-655-7912. Visit us online at catholiccharities.net/Chicago Marathon. We'll see you at the finish line.
God bless you, and Christ's peace be with you. This is Mary Norfleet Johnson, Director of the Office for Black Catholics in the Archdiocese of Chicago. The Office for Black Catholics is a vital and integral part of the Catholic worship community here in Chicago. Our agency serves people of color, encompassing African American, Haitian, African, Afro-Latino, and Caribbean natives. Contact us and learn how to enhance your neighborhoods, your families, and your faith through various initiatives and events designed to strengthen your relationship with Jesus Christ. Our office is located in the Cardinal Meyer Center at 35th and Lake Park Avenue. Call us at 312-534-8376 or visit our ever-changing website at www.blackcatholicchicago.org. We look forward to serving you and your communities.
Welcome back to Catholic Community Faith on Relevant Radio, 9:50 a.m. The time is exactly 9:22 on this Friday morning in Chicago. I'm Father Greg Sackwich, along with Wayne Majors, and our guests, Father Pat Lee, Father Freddie Washington, and Rita Katner. During the break, we were talking about, Pat, how are both the priest and the people prepared for this major type of transition?
Well, I'm not sure we were in Chicago. You learned by doing, but something I learned is that I'm kind of a gung-ho take charge, and I had to pull back and listen to my people. And the second thing I had to realize was when this happened, where two parishes found out they had to share me, there was a lot of grieving going on, grieving for the pastor who retired, grieving for the change of Cabrini Green, which was still home to people who were losing it, grieving at Immaculate Conception that it would never be the same because I would have to share my time with another parish. So you have to allow that grieving.
And in the Archdiocese of Chicago, this is relatively new, but in reality, especially with your experience as a missionary, Father Freddie, in the international front, this has been going on for decades, right?
Yes, and I think for many missionaries, they discover that you have one main parish, and you may have 20 or even more outstations, which are the equivalent of the size of parishes that we would have in this country. So it wasn't necessarily an issue of, when we look at this country, it's not necessarily an issue of the shortage of priests, but we have many, many parishes, some situated right across the street from another,
yes,
or within walking distance of another.
Has this experience as a pastor for two faith communities changed you two guys? How has it changed your approach toward your faith communities? How has it changed your own vocations in how you look at your job as pastor? Father Pat?
I think you learn triage. There are some things that are more important than others, and I used to be a priest that wanted to please everybody. I still want to please everyone, but now I have to have priorities. That's been a change. The other thing is, I think, having pulled it off for 10 plus years, I feel confident. I've gained a sense of confidence that I can handle this.
How about for you, Father Freddie?
I think the greatest thing is that I have learned how to be a different type of pastor, a pastor that waits until the people accept me as their pastor, and me ready to pastor them in the way that they want to be pastored. And so that while I come with a vision, I also hear the way people kind of vision their parish for the future. And I think the greatest thing, especially in St. Mary Magdalene, has been just looking at the many different cross-cultural situations that we find ourselves in, from the Mexican culture, from the Haitian culture, from the African-American culture, from the Polish culture, and how all of that, which is another level of transition, takes place. Yeah.
And Father Pat, here in the U.S., there are good models. I mean, you mentioned...
We went to a national conference, Rita and I and Father Terry Keehan, about 7-8 years ago already, at Mundelein. And some of the dioceses had actually done strategic planning. One of the ones I found most helpful was Green Bay.
Don't mention Green Bay on the air.
Who had...
Delete that, Jim.
Five models based on what you were trying to achieve. And studying those helped me focus very much on what I wanted to do and what I thought the diocese wanted me to do and what the people would accept and support.
You know, Rita, you don't have a crystal ball, but here in the Archdiocese of Chicago, where do you see pastoring multiple parishes going in this archdiocese? I mean, we know the, like when I was ordained in 1979 and Father Pat in 76, we come to the same seminary system. My class, 31 men. Pat, how many?
34.
And now we're, let's see, roughly around 15 is, so mathematically the numbers are going down compared to 30, 40 years ago. What do you see happening in the Archdiocese of Chicago?
Well, certainly there's been a smaller number, and we also have more priests that come from different countries.
Yes.
So even through the seminary system, we have a varied, and that's an experience for a lot of people because they're not used to, in a way, we become more of a missionary diocese where people are coming in to take care of us, where before we would send people out. So that's a big adjustment for folks, you know? And I see, like, up in Waukegan, for example, there, it's bringing a lot of small parishes. They had a great number of parishes. Many were closed in the early 90s, and then down to four sites, and now it's one priest that's got the four sites, but has lots of different things going on. I mean, utilizing the different churches. So there's a social service agency going on in one place. There's things going on more with the sacramental moments and education in another place. They're using the sites and a lot of great ministry going on.
And, you know, the Spirit of the Lord will prevail. I just remember during the time of Vatican II, when Pope John the 23rd had convened the groups, the cardinals, was having a tough day at one of the sessions. This is true. He went to bed one night and said, "Lord, it's your church anyway. I'm going to bed." And somehow you just to be trusting the Lord that it will work out. We need to bring this segment to a close. I want to thank in a very special way Rita Katner, the director of the Archdiocesan Office for Councils, Father Pat Lee, pastor of Immaculate Conception Parish on North Park in Chicago, and St. Joseph's on Orleans, and Father Freddie Washington, pastor of St. Mary Magdalene and St. Ambrose Parishes in Chicago. You're doing an excellent work. Thank you for the ministry you all do. God bless you. Our phone number, 312-255-8408. Hop in on the conversation on Catholic Community of Faith and Relevant Radio 950. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Wayne Majars. Stay with us and do not touch that dial.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son is in the number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
Each night, thousands of families face homelessness in Chicago. Those families aren't just statistics. They're your neighbors, your friends. They could even be part of your own family.
I had lost my job, so I wasn't working, and I had run out of all my savings, so I ended up losing my apartment. And I went to stay with my sister, but she's got this small little itty-bitty condo, so we were all sleeping on the floor. So I started calling around for the housings and everything, and they told me to call Catholic Charities, and it just happened when I got through, Joanne answered the phone, and she goes, "You know, you got me just at the right time. We're actually doing interviews right now. You want to come in?" And gave me the whole rundown of everything and how the program works and everything. She goes, "Is this something you can do?" And I looked at her and says, "You're offering me a roof over my head, something more than I've got right now. And I'm willing to do anything to keep that roof over my head."
Catholic Charities of Chicago is there to provide a helping hand to the homeless. Find out how to help us help the most needy. Visit CatholicCharities.net.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 a.m. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
And welcome back to Catholic Community Faith on Relevant Radio 950 a.m. Time is coming up on 9:32 here in Chicago on this Wayne, actually, the morning they're talking sun. I think it's the first time we've had sun in about
a week. Yeah, it's been a dreary week.
Which is typical
but
January.
Sunshine has walked in the door because Al Genie is in the building.
We have a sighting. Al Genie is here. And on that note, author and Loyola University professor Al Genie joins us live in studio to discuss his newest book, Seeking the Truth of Things, Confessions of a Catholic Philosopher. This book is published by Active Publications, an outstanding publications group here in Chicago. And thanks to Al, we have a couple of his brand new books that we will be giving away to a couple of lucky listeners. So call in 312-255-8408, 312-255-8408. Win a copy of Seeking the Truth of Things, Confessions of a Catholic Philosopher, and also be the third caller and win a picture of Wayne Magyar from his first Holy Communion. Wow, it is lightened up.
Even I haven't
seen
it.
Whoa, is it lightened up?
So, professor, author, mentor, philosopher, ethicist, intellectual, classicist, all around funny guy. Welcome, Al. Thank you very much.
You're very, very kind.
You guys know each other?
You have a marvelous way about you because, in addition to being a professor of business ethics and a philosophy guy, you look at philosophy through a lens of, as I perused your book last night, a lens of a dimension of reality, a dimension of not taking oneself too seriously.
Too seriously,
right?
Yeah.
That's important for you, right?
Well, you know, I went to graduate school, and the first thing you walked in the door was third level of abstraction. You know, they were talking about epistemological problems. I couldn't even spell the word, you know, and I didn't know what they were talking about. And what was the meaning of meaning if we understood what meaning meant? And I thought, this is the wrong way to go. And I had went to Rome. I was the first class at Loyola's Rome Center.
Were you?
Yes,
okay.
Indeed. Right. And I was there and going to the churches and going around, and I realized that the real issues were these fundamental issues. What's the purpose of life? And Socrates is right. The unexamined life wasn't worth living. So I tried to spend the rest of my life professionally is asking basic questions, questions that move us as human beings, not academic questions that only other conoscenti could even begin to answer. Yeah. And so the other factor is, Wayne, I kind of like the kids. And if you don't hook them, you lose them.
Yeah.
So I think the classroom experience has to be entertainment. Otherwise, they're gone.
Yeah. Al, what have your students taught you?
Oh, they've taught me humility. They've taught me that I know much less than I think I know. They've taught me that I have to keep searching, that I have to keep asking questions. They have to revisit the same questions again and again and again because you change, times change, and reality changes.
Now, talk to us about change. It's part of your book.
Yeah, I think change, the single problem right now, sociologically and philosophically, is the reality of change. And it's all these things happening at once. It's not that change is new, but the pace of change has changed. Toffler talked about this in reality. Think of the electronic age. Think of what's happened in the last 25 years electronically. We're sitting in a beautiful, wonderfully crafted radio control room. When I first started at WBZ, you know, it was the top half of the building, and now you could put all that into two computers and broadcast to the real world. The electronic age has changed us entirely, and so we're forced to think faster, react faster, and do more. But I don't think we're doing anything better more necessarily. In fact, even with Facebook, the new social change and the new social networking, we may be actually more abstracted from ourselves than closer.
How has all of this change affected the way you communicate and connect with your students?
Well, I try to be the curmudgeon. I try to be the Luddite. I suggest to them that don't send me an email if you could walk through the door. That give me a phone call on my landline. I do pass out typewriters. You know, and I've been able to master that, and I have an iPad, but I don't tell them where I keep it, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, let's talk face to face. If it's a problem, if it's an emergency, this wonderful device, leave a message on my email. You have a question. Don't send that question to me that way. Let's talk. Yeah. You've got to have enough time. I'm convinced at a break at night, for example, Wayne, and you've been around the university long enough. God, you've been here for, what, 260 years? I've been here for 480 yes, years, exactly. Something like that. That the students go out on either side, and there's a chap talking on his cell phone in the right-hand corner, and there's a young lady talking on her cell phone in the left-hand corner, and they're probably talking to each other, but they don't know exactly. They're in the same class, and they're connecting that way. This artificial connectivity, I think, has broken down human relationships.
Yeah, and that and you mentioned that in your book. You talk about philosophy as a way of life, as a way of really looking, a lens through which we perceive others, which we perceive ourselves, which we perceive the world around us, and all of that is dependent on the filter through which we look, right?
Absolutely.
And when you're in a class in front of 30 students, at least 30,
60 to 90,
he's a good man. His average price per class is way up. That really you have to be conscious of that, right? Because every one of these students are coming to you with a different perspective of life.
And, you know, this is a very difficult topic to talk about, because when you talk about being a model or a mentor, you're saying, oh, let me celebrate myself. And, you know, enough about me, now you talk about me. But I think the reality is, anybody in a classroom, anybody in the pastoral world knows that as soon as you walk in front of a group, you're being watched. I cannot walk in the door without three people. As I walk through the door, you got a haircut? Or is that a new suit? They're watching. They may not like you. They may not love you. But you are a role model, and you have to do something about that. So, am I a perfect human being? Greg Pierce, my publisher, will tell you absolutely not. Do I try as best I can? Absolutely. Do I suggest that there are faults and there are warts and there are mistakes in life? Yes. But I suggest the process is the most important thing. And when I tell them, and I try to tell them every semester in the last couple of books, that's all I've been writing about. I think the real one thing I've learned in life as a thinker and a philosopher, the problem of ethics is this metaphor, the inability to stand outside of the shadow of self. Now, there's a paradox. You can never stand outside of your own shadow. But the reality is we're required, both as Christians, both as believers and non-believers, to be ethical, to what ought we to do with others? To stand outside of self long enough to register the other and to respond to them. The most difficult thing, and at their age, that's something they don't easily do.
Jump into the conversation, 312-255-8408, 312-255-8408. We have guest Al Janin talking about his new book, Seeking the Truth of Things, Confessions of a Catholic Philosopher. Be the first two callers to call in and receive a copy. We've already given one away?
With a question.
Come with a question. Not just a call, but come with a question or a comment. And
the amazing thing about Al's book is it's only 93 pages long, and one would think that the Confessions of a True Catholic Philosopher would be at least 360
exactly.
pages.
Exactly.
I've led a very sheltered life.
We're going to go to a break here on Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. On this Friday, I'm Father Greg Sackwitz along with Wayne Majors, and with us is the soft-spoken professor from Loyola University, Al Janin, the author of Seeking the Truth of Things, Confessions of a Catholic Philosopher. We'll be back right after a break.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you? You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298 or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
It's time to sign up for Parish Leadership Day, Saturday, February 26th at Maria High School. There will be inspirational talks and 100 workshops in English, Spanish, and Polish. Once again, there will be a lively and entertaining question and answer luncheon visit with Cardinal Francis George.
I invite you to join me at Parish Leadership Day. This will be a time for education, for fellowship, and encouragement. We will pray and learn together, and as always, I look forward to conversing with you, answering your insightful questions during our luncheon session. Above all, I thank you for your generosity in serving Christ in His church.
Parish Leadership Day is a great event for anyone who wants to be more active in their parish. For details, contact your parish or go to www.archchicago.org or call 312-534-8364. That's 312-534-8364. Hope to see you Saturday, February 26th at Parish Leadership Day.
And welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. We're talking with Professor Al Genie, Seeking the Truth of Things, Confessions of a Catholic Philosopher.
Why are you smiling, Wayne?
Because Al's just a great guy. He's, you know, he adds a dimension to this. And if you haven't, you know, if you think, well,
it is,
you know,
a great book.
Philosophy, you know, but you not only in the foreword, okay, which was penned by Loyalist President Father Mike Garanzini. You know, Father Garanzini calls him, you know, a true public intellectual. He says is like a great chef. He or she must serve up the truth with imagination and variety, bits of wisdom, doses we can manage, and flavors that entice enough to satisfy without being overwhelming. I think it's an absolutely spot on.
Well, that's very, very, very kind. I paid Father a great deal of money.
Yes, that's what he said. He's going on a long.
But the reality is, Wayne, you just can't walk in and say fact. Yeah. This philosopher, that philosopher. You have to communicate. You have to translate that. And Aristotle was right. You define something, you describe how it functions, and then you got to give a story. If you don't have a story, if you don't have a narrative, it's all over. You just can't get up there. Here are the Ten Commandments. I, two eyes, three eyes. That's a joke for those of you out there who don't remember your Latin. So on and so forth. And say, there they are. Questions? Well, of course there's questions. And so the real teaching becomes, and here's the story. That's what I mean about that shadow of self thing. Can we get out of the shadow of self? Can we step away from ourself? Because it's easy to say, I owe you truth, I owe you this. But how does that really work out in the real world?
You spend a lot of time in the book talking about what you call the most interesting virtue, moral courage.
Yes.
Now, how does that resonate with your students today? And how do you begin to chip away at their being able to define, understand, and kind of grasp that concept of moral
courage? Well, I think what I try to talk about, you know, faith without practice is empty, and ethics without action is a null set. And so I tell them that you could have all the you could be able to spot on name every virtue, but if you can't be a voyeur, you have to walk it around. You have to actually do it. And I think moral courage is actually taking the step. As Churchill said, it's easy to talk about physical courage. You see that everywhere, and one of the Kennedys said the same thing in a different way. But the lack of moral courage to be able to stand up for an idea, to stand up for an issue. And I always give the example, Eleanor Roosevelt, who, as time goes by for me, is just as important as her husband, who had a pretty good job around here for a couple of years, mm-hmm. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, said, "You want to know a person's value? Check their checkbook. How do they spend their money? Yeah. How do they spend their time?" And so I tell students, it's one thing to say, "I really believe in," but unless you act on it, it's empty-headed.
But do they? I mean, you've been in the classroom for a long time. What is that moral foundation today for students versus maybe 10 or 20 years ago? Is it as solid? Is it just different? Is it crumbling? Is it, I mean, how would you, what's the metaphor you would use to kind of draw us a picture?
It's different. I think that our
different good or different bad?
I think different, not as good. I don't want to call it bad.
Okay.
Different, right. Not as good. There's still that cadre of people who want to go out there and do 2 years of the Jesuit service after graduating, want to go off and do the Peace Corps thing. There's always that cadre of people.
Sure.
In every generation, they've always been there. But I think the issues are less relevant right now. For example, this war, this double war is still going on. And one of the reasons this double war is still going on is because no one's being drafted. In the halls across the street, when people were being drafted, there were actions, activities. There were students mobilized to do something. There were faculty mobilized to do something. But now, you know, this is a choice and there's a different thing. I think our present generation of students, and I don't mean this as a terrible indictment, but they are entitled. They have a different platform they begin from, and they're less involved than they would be.
Less involved, how so well?
I think they're less involved intellectually. I think they're less involved in regard to causes, in regard to belief systems. I think they have...
But they expect more.
They expect more. They expect to begin where their parents left off.
And that's what I find. When I deal with couples who are engaged and been presiding at weddings now 32 years, I've really seen a shift where I find today that sense of entitlement where... These young people would like to begin where their parents had after 20 or 30 years instead of, you know, a little apartment.
But I want to be
city.
Very careful about this. I don't think it's vulgar, crass consumerism. It's just what they've gotten used to. And they're less challenged. I think if, you know, Garrison Keillor was correct, if you want to challenge your children, then you have to do something. You have to get in their face. And I think that our students right now are less challenged. And I think there are less immediate issues that bother them. Again, the Vietnam War or 40 years ago, there are different issues. The one issue that's been constant in our campus, of course, and you know this as well as I do, Wayne, has been social justice.
Yeah.
But again, that's a small group. It's not that the entire campus
you know,
is mobilized.
There's the two words you used, Al, that hit me is like the word believe, and the word believe or belief comes from the root to give one's heart to. So it's interesting when we say, I believe in this, I believe in that. Well, the word believe means to give one's heart to. And the best definition of courage I ever heard is, courage means being afraid and still going ahead and doing it.
Yeah. Nelson Mandela said that just recently. Yeah. It isn't that a courageous man, a man of moral fortitude, is not unafraid, but in spite of the fear, it finds it impossible not to act.
Yeah. The other... area that you spend a fair amount of time in this book talking about, and you've written before in other books about, is the importance of and the dimension of work.
Yeah.
I've got some pretty strong feelings about work, especially as it relates to the ethic of work of young people today.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about that. I mean, there's a link, I would argue, between what you just talked about and the foundation of moral courage and how that translates into one's expectations and approach toward ethic of work.
I've had a happy life, Wayne, and I'm willing to share that right now as part of this book. It's kind of a memoir as much as anything else because I've had happy work. And work has been wonderful to me, and I've seen the connectivity. And I've found out that in studying work, and I've written 4 books on work, that the happiest people in work are people in which they're not just working for themselves or about themselves. There's a connectivity to others, that their work is visualized.
It's moving outward.
So it's other-directed. You know, no doctor becomes a doctor so they can stand in the mirror every morning and say, gosh, I'm as healthy as can be, and I'm going to work on that all day. Their job is to be of service to others, and there's where happiness lies. I think that work is critical. But I think that students now are in a different situation. This is really true. When I went all the way to college, I had asked my father 3 questions. Now, I realized for my students, this is days of old when dragons still roamed the earth, but it's not that long ago. Dad, can I go to college? The first question. Secondly, if I go to college, will you help me? If you won't help me, can I live at home and not pay rent? Because my father could have said, no, I've got you, and he did. He got me a card to be a bricklayer, and now you're going to go off and be an apprentice bricklayer because I need the money. And by the way, you're paying rent here, et cetera, et cetera. Remember, Lincoln never left his father's home until he was 21, and he stopped working for his father and never did manual labor again. His father owned him and had sent him out, and that was still the mental set for me. Mm-hmm. Students don't feel that way. There's an expectation you're going to college. Their parents are, and for me, being a teacher, I was the first one to finish high school. That's not the same thing. When I started teaching here, Wayne, this was a blue-collar university. I say here because we're across the street from Loyola University at the Cardinal's residence. But this is a blue-collar university. Now we're nationally rated university. It's a different thing. Students come here with the expectation that they're going to be professionals, not with the possibility that I might get a degree and might be able to find work that is meaningful to me. No, they want a job that pays well, and that's a significant difference. I'm not saying they're lazy.
Right,
but I think they're less motivated to make a difference.
But their career is more salary-driven than heart-driven.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
We're going to go to break here on Catholic Community Faith on Relevant Radio, 950 AM. Our phone number, 312-255-8408, 312-255-8408. We still have a few books to give away. Ask a Question of Professor Al Genie. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Wayne Majars, with Al Genie. We'll be back right after a break.
Most interment arrangements at the 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries are made through a pre-need plan. Your thoughtful planning today is economically prudent and contributes to peace of mind for you and your loved ones. Catholic Cemeteries counselors are available at your convenience. For more information, call 708-449-6100. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
The Catholic New World has been your faith resource for well over a century. Archbishop Patrick Feehan recognized the need for a strong Catholic voice in 1892 and launched Chicago's first Catholic newspaper. Bishop Feehan named our Catholic newspaper using a theme from the Columbian Exposition, the New World that gave people hope for a brighter future. Today, the Catholic New World is better than ever. It's a rich and diverse resource for Chicagoland Catholics with stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Cardinal Francis George and our team of columnists offer compelling insights on spirituality, catechesis, and evangelization. Visit our website at CatholicNewWorld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777. Our look has changed, but we are still your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith, Relevant Radio, 950 AM. Pope John Paul II will be beatified at a ceremony at St. Peter's Square with Pope Benedict XVI on May 1st. If you'd like to join a wonderful pilgrimage for the beatification, a little bit of sightseeing, a private mass with Cardinal George, you can get more information at the Archdiocesan website, www.archchicago.org. Click on Pilgrimage to Rome. And you can get more information. Only 50 in the group. So,
I was going to say it's a very
small group. So call before midnight tonight. Operators are standing by or something like that.
To take your call now.
Al Genie is with us. He is a professor of business ethics at Loyola University, talking about his new book, Seeking the Truth of Things, the Confessions of a Catholic Philosopher. And I sit here among two individuals who have a passion for humor, one being the author of the co-author of the Catholic Joke Book, another one who spends a good portion of this book talking about laughter and leisure. So
but before we do that, Wayne, we're going to go to the lines. We have Joe on the phone with us. Joe, welcome to Catholic Community of Faith. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Father. Thank you. I want to ask the guest speaker, why is this a difference between these generations as far as like the Catholicism and everything, from like the way I was taught and then the way the kids, the young people are today?
Well, that's a great question, Joe. Thank you.
And I've been thinking about that a long time. You know, I've been with the Jesuits 42 years. And the reason I've been able to succeed with the Jesuits is because of the Jesuit tradition. The Jesuits require their students to think, to use reason. But they don't require them to reason like them. Their act of faith is that in teaching people to be reasonable, to be rational, that they will make good choices along the way. But you don't get everybody along the way. Unfortunately, Joe, perhaps if we were the same generation, we were indoctrinated, not educated. I mean, it was just jammed home to us so I could still do prayers at the foot of the altar, Deum quilitificat juventutem meam. You know, I can remember all that stuff.
Oh, yeah,
and we all do if we had a certain generation.
But when you
take a risk when you offer them options. My experience is they come back, but they don't come out as fervent and as singular in their outlook right
well,
now.
Well, Joe, thank you very much for that excellent question. Stay on the line so that Diane can get your address and mail you a copy of Seeking the Truth of Things, Confessions of a Catholic Philosopher. And Joe, you will enjoy the book, and God bless you.
And laughter and leisure, a big portion of all this, too. I mean, you are noted. Your kids love you because you not only put a really contemporary, relatable dimension to a lot of the subjects that you talk about in class, but you use humor to do it.
Well, I think you have to. I think the questions that philosophy and theology pursues are dreadful questions sometimes, are daunting questions, are horrific questions. And unless, as Nietzsche said, who is, by the way, doesn't attend any parish here in this city, suggested, then you to look too long into the abyss is to be overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
And I think you need that break. Even, you know, the reality is, and I've done this very carefully, and I've read all of your jokes, by the way. My favorite one is about the Jesuit, the Dominican, and so on and so forth.
Well, thanks, Al.
You know, but is that you... You have this training is here, and it's so difficult to deal with. But the jokes I was starting to say, the jokes about sex, the jokes about aging, and the jokes about the difficulty of life are really a pause to say, oh, we're all in this together. You know, let's laugh at this thing which we can't avoid. But humor is also a bond as well as a sword and a shield.
Yeah.
My sweet uncle, I'm now the alpha male in my family. My sweet uncle just passed away, so the last adult of my generation is gone. And my uncle, every day when I saw him, every time that I saw him, he would grab me in his arms, pull me to him before the embrazo, before the kiss, he would whisper a joke. So you hear the one about, and he never repeated himself. And years ago, I had asked him, Uncle Joe, why do you always tell me a joke? He pulled away and he says, because I love you, stupid. If I didn't love you, I wouldn't want you to laugh. And I'm sharing something with you. For me, laughter is the energy. Is the passport we have between individuals. So in a difficult situation, talking about the end of the meaning of death, when they're horrified and looking at you, or about the dilemma of this horrible Enron situation, or Bernie Madoff, who I'd like to have, you know, strung up in a public place, and I get really angry about it. Did you hear the one about? Detoxes that and brings us back.
I think people forget humor is a gift from God. And the very fact, or someone said, it takes 16 muscles to smile, 74 muscles to frown. Therefore, we should smile more than we frown.
Yeah.
Are you encouraged about the future when you finish a course, when you go through your soliloquies on the philosophy of life and moral courage with your students today? Do you walk out saying, we're in good hands for the future?
Well, you know, I think it's so easy for professors to say, "Primo la deluge," you know, after me, it's all
right,
over.
Exactly,
I think it happens to all of us after a while, and that's when we should leave.
Yeah.
I do think there's a difference in how students read, what they read. I wish students would figure out when I assign my own book, I know if you've read it, and I know you've only read the three chapters that are online. And I feel that there's sometimes difference in standards, but I'm not afraid. We've done awfully well. In fact, I have students who are in power. I have students in their mid-50s and late-50s who are, in fact, you could have been one of my students, but you avoided my classes as an undergraduate, assiduously avoided my classes as an undergraduate.
I want to make sure we plug ACTA Publications. Visit actapublications.com. It's ACTA Publications.com. Or call 1-800-397-2282. 1-800-397-2282. That's ACTA Publications in Chicago. Outstanding books published, CDs with Greg Pierce.
Al's available for weddings, bar mitzvahs, first communion.
And Al's book, Seeking the Truth of Things, Confession of a Catholic Philosopher through ACTA Publications. And in about 20 seconds, Al, sum it up.
If I could do it again, I would, and I think Socrates is right. There is only one essential question in life. The unexamined life is not worth living. And in answering that question about yourself and what you value, you find out who you are and your responsibility to others.
And on that note, I want to thank in a very special way Al Genie, professor at Loyola University for 42 years, author of several books, but his latest, Seeking the Truth
of Things.
I didn't
even think he was 42 years old.
Confessions of a Catholic Philosopher. I mean, Al, you are energy personified. And so thank you for being a guest. You will be back on again. Special thanks to co-host Wayne Majars, Vice President and Chief of Staff of Loyola University Chicago. Special thank you to the booth people. Excellent work with Diane Dunnigan, our producer. Jim Dish, our engineer, always do an outstanding job. To all our listeners, may God bless all of you. May the Lord always hold you in the palm of his hand and have a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day and God bless you.